The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
We're working like heck.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive. I'm Bear. Alongside Trey Wallace, Davey Hudson, and Jake Lester. Russell is still on vacation. We'll be back tomorrow with us at Smoky Mountain Brewery. We're going to be there from 3 to 6. Probably wolfing down some $6 burgers and some
beer.
Yeah. A lot of beer to wash down the misery that is Tennessee football.
Harvest Fest tomorrow.
How we doing today, gentlemen?
Good. It's Taco Tuesday.
I'm doing well.
At Qdoba.
So I take it the Optimism Tuesday doesn't transfer over to the Drive, Bear?
No.
Okay.
We keep it real.
Shameless Tuesday. Torturous Tuesday.
I don't know. I was thinking about it while we were sitting out there.
Toe-toe Tuesday.
That'd be a good one. Toe-toe.
Players did meet with the media today.
This is the most anticlimactic event that has ever happened in my lifetime, this football season.
That's why Saturday's such a big game. That's why Saturday's a must-win situation for Tennessee. Can't have any more nonsense. You got to win Saturday because of the stipulations going into Tuscaloosa and coming back home for South Carolina. It's a must-win. Players are talking about that with the media today. Hey, time to focus on Mississippi State. Can't be slacking around worrying about Georgia anymore.
Well, no. I mean, you got to put that in the rearview mirror. And I was going to say it. We probably ought to go ahead and do that. You know, I mean, we're here on Tuesday. There's, you know, nothing we can do to change what happened last Saturday night. So,
Trey, I had asked Bear yesterday after you had gone to practice how confident he was that the Vols would get a win against Mississippi State. I'm curious where you fall on that number.
I want to see. Today's going to be interesting to me. I want to see how many players are not at practice because of injuries, because Tennessee suffered a handful of them on Saturday. You had Locklear. You had Calvert. You got Aubrey Solomon hurt right now.
Typically happens when you go up against grown men.
Right, exactly. You got
what did they say about Solomon? I forget. Yeah, you know, I forgot all about that until you just said
dealing
that.
Dealing with a shoulder and knee. Just banged up.
Played
18 plays.
So this is what scares me the most, is that without any competitive depth to speak of, we're going to get through these next four games, and then you get in that part of the season where even if you're healthy, you're still banged up. You know what I mean? Like there's nobody that's truly healthy in November.
Well, I went back last night late, and I was about to pirate watch The Joker, but I decided I'd rather see it in theaters. So then I decided to crank up Mississippi State versus Kentucky. So I watched, and you know, you can go on YouTube, you can find like every offensive play. So you're not watching a 2.5 hour game. It turns into like 35 minutes. Tennessee's going to have a problem with both Mississippi State quarterbacks because Nigel Warrior said it best today. One is a running back. And another is a pocket passer.
Yeah, once Schrader, this is just for all games Mississippi State this year, if Schrader starts at quarterback, he has been the team's leading rusher.
Yeah.
If Tom
Stevens.
Tommy Stevens. If he starts, he's the leading passer, and then you have Kylan Hill, the leading rusher.
Right.
And then Mitchell's their leading wide receiver because that's Stevens' go-to guy. So
I'm just saying they're going to have
it's a bag of tricks, and if you're having to face both of them, if they're both healthy and they want to do like a
which one's a helicopter?
Schrader. If they want to get tricky with it.
Here's the thing. And a lot of people up here don't realize this. Mississippi State will have a decision Saturday before kickoff which players will serve their suspension.
What do you mean?
There's ten total players.
Oh, yeah.
10 total players that have to serve 8-game suspensions over 8 games. But Mississippi State gets to pick the games that the players get to serve the suspension. So, take you back to the Auburn game 2 weeks ago. And
they pick a couple a day?
They picked their two best players not to play against Auburn. They knew they weren't going to beat Auburn.
So they went ahead and got that suspension out of the way.
They got that one out of the way. So now I'm interested to see Saturday.
Well, we'd have to look at the list and then, well, I mean, we could do that if you want
to. But it's up to Mississippi State, though.
Yeah, but we could take an educated guess.
This is a win for Mississippi State. If I'm Mississippi State, I don't bench any of them. I bench the ones that you know that aren't going to play.
Well, yeah.
But you play your starters, not like what you did against against Auburn.
Yeah.
Because you know you can go into Knoxville and get the win.
They think that. I don't know. I've watched some of them this year.
I'm saying it's a lot easier going to Auburn. Auburn's defense is stout.
I'm just saying they aren't much better than we are.
No, I think Tennessee should win the game on Saturday. I know they're 6.5-point favorites, but if they come out and play like they did, like Nigel Worsett said today, we're tired of being talked about as a first-half team. Well, we want to put it together for 60 minutes.
That's on you, bro.
Right, and they were obvious about it. He said that, look, there's things we have to get better at. We got to get better at the D-line and all that. What I'm getting at is that this is a game Tennessee can win and be in for 60 minutes, without a doubt. Now, will they go ahead and take care of business and win a close game? I don't know. But what I'm getting at, compared to other games, compared to that trip you're going to make the next week down to Tuscaloosa, this is a game you got to have. And Tennessee needs to get healthy. Warren Burrell, he was a game-time decision on Saturday. He did not play. Alante Taylor, he's been dinged up. You know, maybe Kenneth George gets some playing time again. And Eric Gray only had one touch.
Why was that?
It's because Tim Jordan got back into the rotation at practice. You got to remember Tim Jordan was hurt. He was dealing with like a little knee sprain and all that good stuff. So he gets back in the rotation.
Yeah,
practice.
But Tim Jordan's not on the same level of the explosive playmaking ability that Eric Gray is.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But also, Jeremy Pruitt did say that, look, we're going to play the guys who practice the best. Maybe Gray didn't have a good week at practice, but also, if you look at what Tennessee was trying to do in the run game, they're trying to go up the middle on Georgia.
Well, yeah, I mean, they tried the one time to
and
go around
and that's why
you
play
them,
Jordan.
You know.
But also, I will say this, too, and I put a video out last night. It was Riley Locklear blocking, and it was Tim Jordan blocking. These veteran guys are better blockers for their quarterback than Eric Gray. Like Tim
Jordan. Yeah, I mean, I understand that completely. I'm just saying Pruitt's got to be smart enough, man. I mean, you both know it. You have to figure out a way in the game plan that I don't care who you're playing, you have to get Eric Gray 10 touches a game, I think. Because out of those 10, I'm expecting him to maybe, you know, maybe House is one of the 10.
You would expect to get him in a situation where you're running a screen, but Tennessee has not been able to pull off screens in the last 2 years.
I need to erase that.
Well, I mean, we haven't had offensive. Yeah, I mean, it's.
Well, no, but that's the thing. It's like, I mean, when you're. As long as you're quick enough to get out on the screen, I mean, you're letting the line come at you anyway. I know that might change a little bit with Maurer being at the helm, but I remember when JG was throwing it, he would definitely take
rockets.
A shot on it, but he never put any touch on the pass in screen situations.
That's all I was saying, Trey. He's such an explosive playmaker. One of the few. I mean, he's one of the, I guess, five or six that you would say that we have that I would think you would want to get him more than one touch in a game.
No, and I think, look, Ty Chandler talked about Eric Gray today. He said he's getting better at practice. He's coming along. I think maybe in that Georgia game, you wanted a little leadership out of Tim Jordan and Ty Chandler. I'm not saying that's the reason why Eric Gray didn't get into the game more. But I will say on that pass to Juwan Jennings where he threaded a needle for a touchdown, Tim Jordan picked up a block coming from the linebacker from Georgia and picked it up perfectly and gave Brian Maurer that extra 1 second to get rid of the football, something that Eric Gray, when he's been lined up in the backfield this year, the problem's been Davion Bear that he's gotten ran over.
Yeah. Well, outside of pass blocking, I mean, at practice, I know you don't get to see a lot, but has there been any word as far as Eric Gray and ball security? Because we know Pruitt does not like to put people out there that, even if they are explosive at times, have been known to turn the ball over. You look back to last year, Jeremy Banks, he kind of gave you a little bit of a burst, but he was very prone to fumbles, RIP. But
I don't think first of all, I think it has to do with practice and maybe him not having the best week and Tim Jordan coming along better than expected. I mean, Tim Jordan had 3 or 4 rushes on Saturday that were hard-nosed rushes.
I think we're just speculating here. Always, since he's been here, he took a shine to Jordan. And I think part of it is that's the only running back we have that physically even, you know, remotely resembles what he's used to seeing.
Looks like a Bama or Georgia running back.
Yeah, he's big and strong. He's just not fast.
Bear, how many carries did you say you thought Eric Gray had?
I thought he had like 5 or 6.
Okay, yeah, he had 5. I don't know. I might have just misheard you earlier. But yeah, he had 5 carries, 5 yards, a long of 9. So I guess most of those were tackled in the backfield.
Crazy. He only got 1 in the first half. Kind of blows my mind. But hey, look, this Tennessee coach, Jim Chaney's offense is run the football, set up the pass. That was his offense at multiple places. And the problem is right now, Tennessee's offensive line is not good enough yet to run the football. And I think you're going to see them try that against Mississippi State. Come out, run the football, see if they can get any traction, and then set it up for Maurer to hit the play action or the pump fake. And because that was a perfect route that Mark West Calloway ran.
Yeah.
He went out, he came in, dipped right back out. And you know what? Riley Locklear gave him that extra second or two with that push off of the defender to be able to throw the football. So,
yeah, I was going to say in Garantano's defense, it's not like over the past couple of years he's had time to wait on a receiver to to run a route with a double move in it. I mean, he was already getting ear hold.
I agree with that, but I also think a lot of it has to do too is your running backs or even your tight ends not picking up on blocks. I mean, it's been all around. And Wanya Moore said it best today. Hey, man, we're working to get better. This offensive line is getting cohesive, and then they're going to try to transfer that into the playing field for 60 minutes. But Trey Smith has been his biggest, helper, leader so far. And also says he's the meanest person on the football team. So,
who's the meanest guy on the team?
Trey Smith, according to Wanya.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's without a doubt. You remember the video when he was still in high school.
Yeah.
Caught the guy stealing his money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was at the All-Star game.
Yeah, he beat where'd that guy end up at?
I don't know.
I think Auburn.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Trey Smith was getting ready to beat him.
Good Lord. Then you had that's something we'll talk about. Nick Bromberg's going to be coming up here soon. Talk about last night's atrocious football game that was Baker Mayfield.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Versus Jimmy G. You got baseball. Braves blew it yesterday. Sucks for them. They'll play tomorrow. Tennessee practice coming up today. Tennessee basketball media days on Friday. Lots of stuff going on campus along with a game coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that. Nick Bromberg going to join us next. Talk some national college football. I might even get to sneak some NASCAR in today because Russell's not here. We'll see you on the other side.
.com. Mama told you there'd be shows like this. This is The Drive.
Rolling back in on The Drive on this Tuesday. I'm wondering, do we have college football tonight? Do we get any MAC action tonight? Not tonight.
There's some games going on tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, App State versus Louisiana tomorrow night.
But the MAC action should start soon, right?
Yeah, it should. Once we get into October, that's when the MAC action starts. I don't know, somebody that would know all about it. Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports. Nick, what up, buddy?
What's up? That Sun Belt game tomorrow night is actually going to be a really good one. Louisiana's only loss was a close-ish game to Mississippi State. App State's undefeated. I think App State, the Sun Belt's a weird conference. App State, though, is a team that could find itself on the periphery of this Group of Five, New Year's Six discussion when all is said and done. But no, we don't have Maction. We're not going to have Maction until November. So the MAC basically plays Tuesday, Wednesday nights in November. But we're going to get, I think, maybe even starting next week, we may get a Sunbelt game on Tuesday. Sunbelt takes all the weekday games on ESPN in
October. We do. It's Troy versus my school, South Alabama. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so there we go. So we got Sunbelt October, MACtion November.
It's funny you should mention that. I was looking at them earlier. Appalachian State is undefeated with a win over North Carolina.
Yeah. And they've got South Carolina on the schedule coming up as well. That's why I think they're sneaky, even if the Sun Belt's a weird conference this year, because you look at Boise State. I realize Boise is number 14 right now. I think Hawaii this Saturday may actually be their toughest game remaining unless you put a lot of stock in Utah State. So if Boise slips up here and you've got an App State team that, when you get down to it at the end of the year, has a conference title and wins over North Carolina and South Carolina, and depending on what happens in the crazy fun AAC, I think App State could sit here and say, hey, look, you let Western Michigan in a few years ago, why not us?
Good Lord have mercy, man. If that goes down, you know what? I'd get behind that in the year after Satterfield leaves, which is even crazier. So, you know what? Let's see how it plays out. I agree with you. Hey, before we get into some national topics, man, Tennessee actually showed some fight in that first half and even in the third quarter against Georgia until Bulldogs finally just started running the football, you know, down Tennessee's throat and kind of wore them out a little bit. But what did you think of Jeremy Pruitt rolling with the freshman and the kind of the spark that he gave them?
You know what? I think we saw a vertical passing game from Tennessee for the first time in a win.
I don't know, nine years?
it was kind of cool. I mean, we knew Brett Maher wasn't going to go out there and light the world on fire, but I think you have to at least, hey, you know what, let's go downfield. We've got literally nothing to lose at this point against a top three team in the country. Why not? And I messaged my coworker Sam Cooper during the middle of that game in the second quarter. I said, I think Tennessee's going to have this close at halftime, but I said, I think they're going to get steamrolled here in the third and fourth quarter, because that's kind of, you know, how it felt like. But again, this is a team that could have easily rolled over, but there are some positives to take from the bye week in that the bye week didn't compound things and everybody didn't give up. This is clearly a team that had not given up. I was impressed with the first 30 minutes.
Isn't this weird, dude? Like, we're not just saying this because we're in Knoxville. I would say this if I was anywhere in the country doing a radio show. Tennessee is 1-4 right now. They've got losses to Georgia State, BYU, Florida, and now Georgia. But you still don't see this team giving in. Like, I expect them to come out against Mississippi State and put up a hell of a fight and have an opportunity to win. Like, there's a lot of programs that things would fold. Is that a testament to leadership of, like, Juwan Jennings and Callaway and Trey Smith? Or does a little bit of that rub off with Jeremy Pruitt?
I think it's all the above. You got to look at this and say, hey, if you've got guys that did not feel like their coach was fighting for them, and you know, it didn't have a bond with their coach,
yeah,
it's so easy to throw in the towel. And this, you know, Jeremy Pruitt's only been there 2 years. For a lot of these guys, Jeremy Pruitt was not the coach that recruited them to Tennessee. And you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm on with you guys. I'm not going to be surprised at all if Tennessee beats Mississippi State, because this is a Mississippi State team that is not nearly as good as we thought they were at the beginning of the year. I think Garrett Schrader has some promise, but again, you're dealing with the ups and downs of a freshman quarterback. Tommy Stevens with that injury that happened against Kansas State, where, you know, they got mauled by a Kansas State team that I think we overrated maybe a little bit after that game, because now K-State lost to Oklahoma State and then at home to Baylor. So, you know, Tennessee beats Mississippi State. I'm not, will it be an upset? Maybe, but am I going to be stunned it happened? Heck no.
What's a coach that's on the hot seat right now in college football, besides Clay Helton? Because Clay Helton's on an automatic hot seat. I mean, who's the first coach that comes to your mind? Because mine is in the SEC, and it's Derek Mason. But that's just me being regional.
No,
Chip Kelly? I mean,
Lovey Smith.
I was gonna go a lot of different places here. I think you can say Derek Mason, absolutely, because none of us expected Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt might have been a sleeper again, 6-6, 7-5 team, kind of like they were last year. But quarterback, they had the skill position players on offense. Agreed. Quarterback was the concern. This is a Vanderbilt team that's just getting its doors blown off, and Derek Mason comes in, defensive coach from Stanford, and, you know, we expect Vanderbilt to play a modicum of defense, and they have not so far this year. At what point does Vanderbilt say, all right, this is not what we thought we were going to get after James Franklin? And also, Does this put James Franklin's success at Vanderbilt in an even brighter light, given what he did at that program before going to Penn State? Chip Kelly, 1-5 now at UCLA. I still think you have to give him time, but at what point do you... It's crazy that a team like that, usually a college football team can capitalize off of a 50-point second half like they had against Washington State.
Yeah.
I realize it was a Washington State team that just folded like a cheap tent. I get that. But, you know, UCLA has done nothing since then. You know, we would be talking right now, if Michigan's defense hadn't showed up on Saturday, about Jim Harbaugh. Because, you know, the offense still in Ann Arbor is a complete disaster. I get Iowa's defense is good. I get it. But 10 points, 10-3, that was a painful, painful football game to watch. And, you know, if Michigan is going to contend in the Big Ten East, which I do not think they're going to, they have to be able to score some points, and they can only do that against Rutgers.
I don't know. I look at
that was the one I was going to mention. Harbaugh, and then the other one. I mean, I feel like Jeremy Pruitt's the X factor, Nick, because, I mean, he's only in his second year. The last thing Tennessee or any of us want to see happen is, you know, a 1-11, and we're really having to look at whether or not we should blow this guy out. But
fire up the flight tracker.
But Harbaugh's done. I mean,
he was recently on an episode of Judge Judy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. What? Yeah, no, he really was. Yeah,
he was
yeah.
just an audience member in the background.
But Nick,
he loves Judge Judy.
Right. Here's a question. If Jim Harbaugh was at any other school besides Michigan, okay, would he still have a job with the record that he's doing right now and the stuff maybe off the field and the way he treats some people? Would he still have a job if he was at like any other school besides Michigan?
Yes, because I think Michigan has inflated expectations that Harbaugh has had success, but he has not had the right type of success because of what he has failed to do against Ohio State, against Michigan State. His status as an underdog, I mean, when his teams are underdogs, they just flat out are not very good. You know, and here another guy in the hot seat that no one really cares about, especially down your way in SEC country, is Steve Adazio of Boston College. I mean, going down to Louisville, you mentioned Scott Satterfield earlier. This is a Louisville team right now in the dumpster fire that is the ACC. That 6 wins in a bowl game is not crazy to think about.
It blows my – he's been there a while, too. I don't know. I could see a change up there happening. And if it does, are Greg Schiano and Butch Jones
That's what
candidates
I was getting ready
for
to
that
ask.
Position?
It's fascinating to see what Rutgers does here. They have a head start on everybody else with potentially the least attractive Power 5 job in the country. It probably is the least attractive because, I mean, you look what Jonathan Smith is doing at Oregon State right now, given that they beat UCLA on Saturday. So what do you do with this lead time? Do you make a wholesale change at the top of the athletic department and go 2-for-1 here and let a new AD hire a new coach? Do you keep Hobbs in charge and say, hey, look, you know, we're entrusting you after the Chris Ash thing went so well or poorly? And it's a tough, tough situation right now for Rutgers. They're playing a team in another tough situation in terms of their Big Ten status of Maryland. And it's the expansion failure game for the Big Ten this weekend because you take two schools. Rutgers had success in the old Big East. Maryland was, you know, with a fit and won 8 games on occasion in the ACC. And now these two programs are struggling for relevancy and bowl games here in the Big Ten. And it doesn't help that they are in the Big Ten's toughest division alongside Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State. So, you know, the Big Ten got what it wanted in terms of a national footprint, but you have to look at it, if you're going to compare the SEC's expansion to the Big Ten's expansion, I mean, the SEC's, in terms of success on the field in football, the SEC has just blown the doors off the Big Ten in that respect.
All right, speaking of the SEC, I don't know if the first one is a big matchup, but it is Jimbo versus Nick, okay? It's going to happen in College Station. Bama's a 13-point favorite over Texas A&M. And then you look at the nightcap, Nick, where I would absolutely love to be down there, not working and just partying in Baton Rouge with LSU and Florida and game day and the wackiness that's going to be there. When you look at those two games this coming up weekend and the performances from the past weekend, how do these two games match up on a national scale, man? Is Texas A&M worthy enough to play with Alabama right now, or do they need another year or two?
I'm stunned that Texas A&M is even ranked at this point. You know, I think they're the team that's hanging on here, and this is going to be the loss that drops them from the top 25, potentially, I think, for the rest of the season. And I think also, too, if CBS could go back in time here in 2 weeks, they'd be going, oh, we should have predicted a Florida win and taken LSU-Florida for our 3:30 game and not Alabama-Texas A&M, because I am struggling right now. I'm pretty much a religious viewer of those 2:30, 3:30 games, and has there been a competitive one yet?
No.
All year?
I mean, Alabama beat the hell out of Mississippi State, and then Florida beat up on Auburn.
And the matchups the next 2 weeks aren't that great either. I mean, so, you know, but I am just absolutely super excited for what could happen in Baton Rouge. But apparently Vegas is not. I've seen that line is somewhere like 13 points.
Yeah.
I mean, I get you don't trust Kyle Trask. I don't think Florida's a contender. I do not think they are a playoff contender, because I do think LSU wins this game. But I am stunned it's not in the single digits, even if it's just 8.5 or 9 compared to 13. And, again, I understand Kyle Trask not being able to keep up with Joe Burrow and the LSU offense. But if the Florida defense brings it like they did against Auburn, Florida has a shot. I'm not sure what that is, but it's at least a puncher's chance.
The SEC on CBS, they're going to have to pay a crap load of money next year, aren't they?
Oh, without a doubt.
That new contract, I mean, that's it. Let me ask you, is it worth maybe 75% of Monday Night Football or 50% of Monday Night Football money?
That's a great question.
Because they're
question.
Also getting the SEC championship game in that package deal.
Yeah, and then you also get what? 2 primetime games a year.
Yeah, you get 2 doubleheaders.
And then we'll have, obviously, LSU-Alabama as we go forward here into November. Yeah, I don't think that's out of the question, especially with the way live rights are going. And you also want to make sure that you keep, if you're CBS, you want to make sure you keep having the top pick of games, because you want to have Alabama on there 5 times a year as long as Nick Saban's the head coach.
I just always found it, right. No, I agree, because Nick Saban's going to be the coach for another 5 years, and then who knows what's going to happen at these other schools. But then I look at it also, too, and I got just a few more minutes with you. You look at how ABC, they always air Big Ten, Pac-12, or Big 12 on their primetime games at 7 o'clock. Wouldn't this have been like the perfect opportunity this week for the ABC, or could they? And this is a question. Could ABC have come in and swept up the LSU-Florida matchup and took them off ESPN and put them on primetime ABC?
No. My understanding of that TV contract is that the SEC second choice game is always going to be on ESPN at like 6 or I'm talking in central time here, 7, 8,
right,
or like 9:15. So, no, ABC is contractually obligated to go with Big 10, Big 12, Pac-12 or ACC. They basically take their best matchup of that. But that also then depends now, too, because what's happening on Fox with Big Noon, I'll make sure I emphasize Noon there, Noon Saturday, and then Fox taking the top Big Ten game every day at noon, and then that puts ABC in a treacherous spot here, and then Fox, obviously this week, has the top Big 12 game, Red River always at noon kickoff, going to be on Fox this week, which is why I believe the ABC game, if I'm not mistaken, Saturday night is Iowa-Penn State, which looks a lot better if Iowa wins that game in Michigan.
No, I agree. It's just interesting how these TV contracts line up. And technically, ABC, National Network, is getting the third or fourth best game of the day. I mean, honestly. Yep. And that's every weekend almost. So
you got to appreciate Fox's play for the early. I realize the TV audience as a whole is smaller, but from the diehard's perspective, from everybody listening here, you have to enjoy that there's an awesome game now, or at least a supposed to be awesome game, that kicks off to start the college football day rather than stacking up 3-4 great games that you have to flip around to either in that 3:30 window or that 7-8 p.m. window.
Nick, I'm going to ask you on the way out, brother. The playoffs are going on in NASCAR right now, and it got kind of interesting last weekend. It wasn't, I don't know. It is what it is.
It was interesting for 8 laps, and then it was
right.
Snoozer.
Right. Talladega's this weekend. Give me that, because you know it's going to be crazy. And if I'm Kyle Larson, I just park my ass in the garage after the first three laps and say, have at it.
Yeah, if I'm Kyle Larson, I don't want to fly again. I mean, because he flew at Talladega in the spring. I'm like, hey, man, I'm riding in the back. I honestly think from a tactical perspective, what the Joe Gibbs racing cars do on Sunday is going to be interesting. Truex Jr. has a 63-point lead on ninth. That's more than a full race with stage points. Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch are like 48 points. They're 15 points back of Truex. If I was running Joe Gibbs Racing, I would make my guys run at the back of the field, try some pit strategy from stage points, and stay out of the crashes. Use the cushion to your advantage and don't get your car crashed and try to get a top 15 out of it.
So who, Nick, who do you feel like has to just go, they can't?
Balls to the wall?
Yeah, they have to go for it.
Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott. And that's, you know, two guys that have shown that they're really fast at Talladega previously. So I think Blaney and Elliott, UA would be up near the front no matter what their points position was on Sunday, but especially Elliott being the defending runner at Talladega winning this spring. And also, you know, Alex Bowman, second at these three racetracks in the spring, second Dover in the spring, finished third on Sunday. Who knows? Maybe he does it again at Talladega and gets another top three.
I got a feeling Alex Bowman's not going to finish the race on Sunday, but...
Well, I'm talking to him tomorrow, so if you have any questions, I'm going to ask him. I just
would like to know if he likes blue Powerade or orange Powerade. I guess that's the best one.
I'll ask him what his favorite flavor is.
Hey, by the way, though, that was a good interview with Dale Jr. You know, me and you talk a lot about what goes on with Bubba, and I thought he got a lot out. I think fans can realize now that there was a lot more going on than people knew.
I have not had a chance to listen to it yet. I listen to podcasts religiously as I walk the dog through the bus, and it's on my list for the next day or two.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So we'll see if Bowman makes it out of Sunday, but have fun with that tomorrow, though. I think that'll be a good interview. And I like Alex Bowman. He's not a bad guy. Just sometimes he come off as kind of pompous. But you know what? We'll see. Sunday will be crazy. Talladega, the wrecks are going to be galore. We'll wait for the big one, and somebody's playoff chances are going to get ruined. And I guess that'll what make Sunday a lot of fun. So we'll see. Nick Bromberg, my man, tell everybody where they can follow you and your fantastic work.
At Nick Bromberg on Twitter and sports.yahoo.com. Click the NCAA football and NASCAR tabs for anything and everything that I am writing this fall.
My man, thanks for joining us, buddy. Have a great week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks, brother. Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports, always a fun interview. Always a fun interview.
I don't know what kind of accent you're trying to do.
I have no idea. I actually didn't mean to say always, but I said it anyway, so I just kind of went with it.
Okay.
I'll see you on the other side. It's Drive.
The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com.
Life Championships. Only alphas listen to The Drive. It's time for the Rickard Ridge Barbecue Smoking Hot Question of the Day. Brought to you by Rickard Ridge Barbecue. Located in Cove Lake State Park. Online at RickardRidgeBBQ.com.
Today's Rickard Ridge Barbecue Smoking Hot Question of the Day is, how many more games will the Tennessee Volunteers win in the 2019 season? Going to give you the options of 1, 2, 3, and 4 or more.
This is really, usually I go way over the top on this. Like, I'm always a glass is half full kind of guy, Davey, but... You know, I got to answer this question with my brain. I'm going to say 2. That's being optimistic for me right now.
They say great minds think alike, because I'm right there with you. I do believe that the Vols will finish the season at 3-9. I do expect more competitive games down the stretch to where you're probably going to have a heartbreak loss or two. But at this point, I'm just looking for competitive games that I'm actually able to watch in the fourth quarter and be like, hey, at least we're still in it.
Yeah, without feeling like you have to chug the nearest bottle of liquor.
Jake, how are you feeling on that one?
I think that Tennessee can win 4+, but they're definitely not going to. And so
I mean, is that the most maddening part about this team is that it's fairly obvious to me that we should be a lot better than we are. Like, we should be at what? We should be 3-2 right now. We weren't going to beat Florida this year. We weren't going to beat Georgia this year.
I mean, I would be fine just saying 2-3 because, like, I mean, BYU, they're no world beater, but they're a competent team. I mean, when you look at what they have, I mean, any other given year, I'd be like, yeah, I'm taking the Vols, but I could at least see why. I mean, I'm trying to think of what they are on the season as I pull it up, but it's at least a respectable football program. I know they're not Power 5, but when you do think of schools outside of the Power 5, I mean, that's definitely higher up on the list since they're independent. So I'm with you guys. It's really frustrating. It's something that I think no matter what happens at the end of the season, however many wins we get, we're just going to look back and you're just going to be, man, those first two games of the season. It's just, why did the Cards have to fall the way they did? But, I mean, just early on.
I think it's on Pruitt and those guys. So, you know, I mean, if we do go out Saturday and not perform again, you know, a good alternative to drinking, Davey, is to drive, take a drive. You're going to go up I-75.
Not while drinking, alternative, just so we're clear.
No, this
right?
Total alternative.
Okay.
You just get in your car, take a drive up I-75 to Record Ridge for some of the best barbecue you'll ever have, fall off the bone Memphis-style baby back ribs, slow-smoked chicken thighs, fresh hand-cut steaks. Record Ridge has it all. It's located in Cove Lake State Park. You can relax, get your mind off the game. And, you know, it's got a spectacular view of the Cumberland Mountains. Record Ridge is more than just dinner. It's a destination. You can check out the full menu at recordridge.com. recordridgebarbecue.com.
Well, Bear, I know it's early on, and if you would like to go vote on this poll, you can go to @FoxSportsKnox on Twitter, and you'll see the polling options there. But right now, with 3% of precincts reporting, the leader in the clubhouse is 4 or more with 33% of respondents.
Wow.
Yeah. And then in second, 31% of the vote believe Tennessee will have 3 more wins. 25% are in the same boat as you and I at 2, and then 11% are saying 1. So, again, that is early. We'll keep you updated on it.
The VFL group or
Vol for Life Facebook is getting –
is voting early and
getting
often.
Getting on to Twitter.
I could see 3. I'm going to go with 3.
You're going to go with 3?
Yeah, because I think we're going to beat UAB. They're no pushover, but I think we're going to find a way to beat UAB. I think we can beat Vanderbilt, and we will. And then if Kentucky can't figure out this whole quarterback thing, then that one could be a walk in the park.
Man, I hope we beat Vanderbilt.
Now, South Carolina, that one is definitely winnable. I don't know.
I'll believe we beat Crazy Eyes when I see it.
Muschamp's in our head, and it's a lot more winnable than I'd say Mississippi State is, even though Mississippi State is winnable. When you look at the spectrum, I would definitely put South Carolina as a easier victory than Mississippi State. So I think we can get 3, potentially 4, but I will believe 4 when I see it.
Do either of you know the last time a Tennessee team beat a team with Will Muschamp on the coaching staff?
No.
Was it Auburn?
It was LSU 2001.
Oh, during the season?
During the season. And then, of course,
the franchise.
Yep.
Wow. And then he was part of that staff that started the downfall in the SEC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
That's our one moment where we go back and change the course of UT history, probably.
So, yeah, but I mean, if you're looking at the South Carolina games, like, that's one that, like, I feel it's going to be a close game because it really doesn't matter how good either team is. It just kind of has always come down to the wire the last several years. I believe since 2012, every single game has been decided by 6 points or less.
And I think that being in Neyland is definitely going to be a factor because last year, I have a firm belief that last year, if we had played Kentucky at the grocery store up in Lexington, that we would have gotten probably smoked.
No, that wasn't happening, Jake Lester.
You don't think so?
No.
Maybe not beaten,
that's the one team.
But we would not have dominated like we did.
I really don't even think like crowd atmosphere for that game. It was just such a defensive minded game, because really when you're looking at Tennessee's points from that, when you obviously had the Hail Mary at the end of the half.
Yeah, I mean that was a total street fight. So we're going to take a quick break right here. Phone lines are open, 865-546-8200, 865-546-8200. Would love to get your all's input on the hot question and anything else that you're wanting to talk about. But this is a drive on Fan Run Radio.
You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
Welcome back to the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios. The Drive rolls on. We're going to go right to the phone lines, next door home group hotline, and grab T-Carp. T-Carp, how are we doing today, buddy?
Hey, guys. We're doing well. Is Trey still in there with you guys?
He is left. He is headed to practice. Got to get there on time for the media availability, but we'll field your questions.
Yes, just ask him what Bubba Wallace was doing, not last week, but the week before last. Wanted to get his insight on Bubba flipping that guy off and then the guy spinning Bubba around at Charlotte. I thought that was I want to hear Trey's backstory behind that.
Yeah, I said we'd answer your questions. I have no comment on that one whatsoever, but I will I'll reach out to Trey, and he'll be able to get back to you on that one.
I definitely understand. Guys, help me with this. Is Pruitt just that stubborn to not admit that he might have been wrong on Garantano and Brian Maurer should be the starter? Pretty much looks like from day one.
I don't know, man. I was talking to a friend of mine who played over there, and you know, we were talking about that, and he basically said, "Yeah, that's a pretty hard ask." To, you know, just come in and just start him from the beginning. I think my biggest problem with how they handled it was that they didn't – I don't feel like, from what we know, because practice availability for media is so limited, it doesn't sound like Maurer got enough snaps during fall camp.
It definitely doesn't. I mean, he looks like the more poised guy. I can understand that you want to give Garantano the most snaps because he's you know, the older guy, and you're trying to implement Chaney's offense. But at the same time, you look at that, like, it's cemented to me when Garantano, very late in the game, you could have scored 21 points against these guys. He's got it on the goal line, and they can't score. And that cemented to me that Garantano cannot do it. Am I wrong to think that?
No, I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. I mean, it's not an unpopular opinion around town.
Right, I'm usually the unpopular guy, but hey, did you check out Furman's score, Bear?
No, I don't follow Furman football. You know this, T-Car.
I do understand that, but just wanted to update you. They're running through the Southern Conference like crap through a goose. 58 points. They're just clubbing baby seals left and right, and George Quarles has them up to number 11 in the FCS. So I'm telling you, man, he's making some waves. I hope you have a good day, Bear. I'll see y'all.
See you, T-Carp. Have a good one, buddy.
He's the head of the George Quarles cult out there in Maryville.
Yeah, he called in this morning wanting to throw it to Nathan Houston about it. We didn't have a chance to get to it. I mean, I he played for George, didn't he?
Him?
T-Carp, yeah.
Yeah, he showed up. Russell brought him in here last year. He showed up in his jersey with his championship ring.
Oh, he came all out.
Oh, yeah, it was damn. He also brought Richie Cream. He brought some donuts for us that were really, really good. But, yeah, I mean, T-Carp's in the cult. He's a Kool-Aid drinker.
I was looking. I know we were talking about the schedule before that, and it's actually pretty amazing. I'm looking at the teams that Tennessee, I know UAB got mentioned, but we just talk about how we're looking at the schedule. And before the season, the schedule, it looked favorable. You could see how Tennessee could get to 8 wins by looking at what we were going up against before Georgia State game happened.
It would still be on the table if we were sitting at 3-2.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, if we hadn't lost the Georgia State game, whatever alternate timeline that is, I think that it was very possible. I don't think it was out of the realm of reality to think that we might get to 8-4 this year. Pruitt arrived a little bit early, but obviously, apparently, he's still, somewhat learning on the job, and I don't know if we'll ever know the real story about what happened behind the scenes building up that week to the Georgia State game. There's still no reason in the world we should have lost that game.
Nope. That's going to be one we're going to look back on in decades to come and just be like, what the hell happened?
I mean, it tops – I can't think of one any worse. I mean, you got, I guess, a North Texas game that was like in 75. Rutgers, but they were, they weren't the big whatever they're in now then, but I mean, they were a Division I team, but I mean, to lose to Georgia State's that's just beyond the pale. Just awful. Golly. See, I get depressed every time we talk about it.
Well, I mean, it's not a very uplifting conversation, and I was looking at this earlier, and it's just frustrating. And again, like, I know we're starting to turn the page as far as how we're looking at this team with Brian Maurer being what looks like the starting quarterback moving forward. So I think that's leading to more optimism for some people. But I was looking at the numbers earlier, and I understand, like, in year two, I'm not expecting Jeremy Pruitt to come out here and just win the East. Like, I understand the cards he was dealt with the roster and everything surrounding the Tennessee football organization. That being said, I'm not expecting to have four of your last four SEC games where you're getting beat by 25-plus points.
It's absolutely brutal, man.
And like this goes back to last November. So going all the way back to last November, Tennessee has been outscored by its SEC opponents 172-71. You're being outscored by 100 points, over 100 points in your last five SEC games. That's just unheard of.
Good God, man. That's
this
just
is
awful.
The lowest point in Tennessee football history.
All right. Well, I'm going to go jump off the top of the roof. Hour number one in the books, hour number two coming up next. You're listening to Drive on Fan Run Radio.